Welcome back to Toys on Tap. This week is a sick week. We bring on Bull Airs and they crush it, telling us their backstory, how they started, where they're at, and where they are headed. If you want more Toys on Tap, you can go on all socials at Toys on Tap. It's where you get all kinds of fun stuff. You can see competitions we're running, all kinds of goodies. You can stay up to date on toys we're producing, all that. If you want to support the show in a free way, you can like, rate, review, subscribe wherever you get podcasts. It is free for you. It means the world for us. I could just kiss your face. And if you want to support the show even more, you can jump on patreon.com/toysontap. It's where you're going to get episodes of the nitty gritty, the videos from the interviews, maybe even some cool deals coming up, all kinds of good stuff. Now let's get into this week's episode, Toys on Tap. I'm pumped that you're on. We've never actually officially met. I'm Abe.
Nice to meet you, man.
We've talked a little bit because the dream is that we can figure out a way that Toys on Tap works with you.
Heck yeah.
And I see you at the booth at every designer con.
yeah.
Which is rad. And then I see the shoes that come up, which I've never seen, like, I guess what do you call them? Designer shoes?
They're just, you know, they're shoes, pop culture. Because I'm actually working on, you know, who Ron English is, I'm guessing. Yeah. So Ron, we have a license with Ron. So we're working on these super size Ron shoes right now.
Those are so good.
Before I got on this meeting, I was working on the animation for it. So like they're sitting on a pile of fries.
Yeah.
And there's money dropping down on it.
Can I leave that in the episode? Because.
Yeah, that's fine.
Awesome. We're working through a 5-part series with Ron English. We just finished episode 3.
Oh, nice.
Heck yeah. Those shoes look so good.
At the bottom, you probably, I don't know if you can see it, but it has the artwork for it.
I wouldn't even want to wear them. That's the hard part. I just want to put them on my shelf.
So we're going to do this one, and then we're doing a black and white Chase variant too.
Yeah.
Which is super fun.
Holy moly.
And then, but you can't see it, but like there's like little dollar signs embossed in it. Same thing here. It says supersize this motherfucker. And then it obviously has that in the back. And then on the little thing here, it has like contains corporate greed and fat, and all that or something. So it's fun.
My hope is that when those come out and he goes to like designer con or something, he's wearing them. To see him in those 100%. Would be awesome.
Yeah, we're gonna most likely have him signing stuff at the booth.
Awesome. I'm pumped to have you on. Long time coming, worked it out, got it here. And I have so many questions for you. So I hope you're ready to dive in.
Yeah.
Before we start any episode, it always starts the same. Please tell us who you are and what you do.
Yeah. So my name is Tom Bowman. I am the founder, creator, mad genius behind Bull Airs. Originally, I started making the shoes by hand, but since then we've scaled. And now I just design them and paint them and work my crazy brain into making cool shoes for everybody.
Which I don't even know if that explains it.
Yeah.
I'm pumped that you're here. We got to start at the beginning because you're kind of toy adjacent, right? Like surrounded 100%. By toys. And so let's start with name and then we're going to jump into your history in this. Like, where's Bull Airs come from?
So Bull Airs is just as simple as it sounds. My last name's Bowman.
Yeah.
So that's where the bowl comes from. And then when we first started making these, when I was making all by hands, they were all Nike Airs, you know, Air Jordans. So that's Bull Airs. It's as simple as that. But now I tell everybody, say it in one nice Bull Airs. You know what I mean? It's Bull Airs. So it sounds like a real fancy, like luxury French brand or something like that.
Absolutely. Walk me back. History. Let's take back to childhood. The game or the toys that you're playing with, the shows you're watching, all that stuff. Set up your childhood for me.
Yeah, I mean, I am definitely a child of the 80s. I was born in 79, but My wife says that doesn't count because it was December. So it was the last, you know, 20 days of the 70s. So I'm an 80s baby. It's like everybody else, you know, wake up at 6 a.m., get a bowl of Fruit Loops or Captain Crunch was my go-to, sit in front of the old, you know, click dial TV, put on, you know, ABC, NBS, ABC, NB, you know, CBC, whatever, the all those channels, put them on and just watch your favorite cartoons until your mom yelled at you and told you to get dressed and go outside. And then you were outside till the streetlights came on, and that's when you knew when to come home.
Yeah. And what's great, I'm in the 90s. And so it's like, that was like a 2-decade period where we all did the same thing. And we all had the same kind of toys, all watching the same cartoons, same sugary cereal, all the goodness.
Yeah.
You have a lot of toys growing up? Are you surrounded by?
A ton. Star Wars was my go-to. You know, especially Christmas time, you know, we'd go to the mall, KB toy stores, and I'd be like, I want that. I actually have a few of the old, you know, carded toys. For some reason, I have a Skiff Guard Weequay from Return of the Jedi figure carded that I don't know why, but I never opened it. Maybe I got a bunch, but it was in the discount bin. You remember the bins that used to be out from KB, and they had the little red line through it. So I guess I probably love that character so much. I mean, my dad buy me like 2 or 3 of them, and I kept one. So it's still here in the office, which is really, really cool. But Star Wars was the main one. But I mean, I was a sucker for them all. Like, you know, I liked Visionaries and Sectors, Madballs, of course, Ninja Turtles. I was obsessed with Ninja Turtles, for sure. Kind of got out of it at the, when it hit the 90s and kind of like, as long as it had the classic brick wall back, you know, back card back artwork, I was collecting that, but after that it kind of fell off. You know, got into high school and all that stuff, so
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I collected everything back then, so it was fun.
That's, I mean, dude, if the crazy thing is that you kept one that was carded.
I know.
That's insane, and that you still have it.
Yeah. Well, the crazy thing is I always open my stuff through the package on the ground. So just to find one, I found it a few years ago when I was at my parents' house when they were moving, and they're like, oh, we still have this. I'm like, how the heck do you have that?
Yeah. You're like, that's now hundreds of dollars. Don't touch it.
Yeah. I mean, it's Weequay, so it's maybe worth $50.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, still cool.
Also to have that character and that's the one you gravitated towards is a weird one. And I love it.
Yeah, it has a cool story, because I still have it in the case over here. Actually, I'll grab it real quick.
What up, toy nerds? This is Ray.
And Dave. Go check out our brand new YouTube channel, The Toy Rats.
We make toys.
We talk about toys.
We talk about old toys.
And new toys.
And toys that we make.
And we're just a bunch of goofballs. It's a good time.
We make fun of Dave a lot.
I'm all right with that. So, if you get a chance, go check out Toy Rats on YouTube. You won't be disappointed. You might be.
Yeah, you could. Who knows?
You got to check it out.
Toy Rats. YouTube.
Bye.
Yeah, so.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so it's still in pretty good condition. There's, you know, you're, of course, yellowing of the later cards. But, I just remember my dad buying it. So, like, when I, you know, when I look at it, I go, oh, that's a memory of me and my dad, which is really cool.
See, this is why toys matter. They unlock something in us that, like.
Well, I also feel like toys are a time machine, man. Like, I mean, tell me you're not at a flea market or a garage, especially a garage sale, and you pick up, you know, a Centurion's toy, right? And you go and you immediately go back to the sometime in the 80s and where you were immediately holding that toy. It happens all the time. Like, nostalgia in that sense is very much a time machine, you know. Like, same thing with, like, you get a smell that crosses your path, and you immediately go, oh, I remember that from my grandma's house, or, you know, fill in the blank any way you want. It's cool.
Like, you see it at like a flea market or something, and that brings you joy because you're like, oh my gosh, this is the toy I had. And then the thing that brings me sadness is when you see like old ads and the toys, like the old Shogun Warriors were like $11.99.
Yeah.
You're like, that's I'm so sad.
And then you always have to make that bad joke, because it will say on the card that, you know, you're buying it from some flea market guy or whatever, and you're like, oh, it says $2.99. Like, come on, man.
Yeah.
$2.99.
I will say that is the driving force behind me not going to those anymore. I mean, with eBay and smartphones and all that stuff, everyone believes they have gold on the table.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Sometimes it is gold, but it used to be where you didn't know that.
Yeah. And yeah. Now, I mean, that was I remember going to around 2010. I was at a garage sale in Pennsylvania when I lived down there, and I found a blue snaggletooth loose. Yeah. And I don't know if you know much about blue snaggletooths, but even back then it was around $250 to $300 for that figure. And I found it at a garage sale with a bunch of other Star Wars toys. And I'm like, how much for the Star Wars toy? And the guy's like, $1, you know? I'm like, oh my. And you walk away like, I just stole from this guy.
Yeah. There's a part of you that feels bad, but then there's a bigger part that's like, I have something great.
Yeah. Also, if it's your friends, you'll always say like, yo, it's worth more than that. But if it's somebody like that at a garage sale or whatever, I'm like, that's on you. If you didn't do your research, I don't feel bad.
Yeah. art at some point picks up in your life because everything that you do now screams art, and not even like the typical art, but like art that my art teachers never told me about. And so,
So even back then, I remember in first grade, drawing, I recreated Return of the Jedi in a comic book.
Yeah.
I drew it all up and showed it to my teacher, and they're like, wow, this is really good. And then I specifically remember, what was the name of that movie? Little Monsters with Howie Mandel.
Yep.
I remember redrawing that as a comic book too. And then, you know, I was always, so my goal when I was from 1 year old till probably senior in high school was I was going to work at Disney. I was going to be an animator. So yeah. that was kind of my thing. And then, so all through that, I was drawing. I was the draw kid in school. Like everybody, if you had an art project, you came to me. If you needed help with something, even above that, you know, in social studies, we had to do these video like news update things, but you were allowed to be as creative as you want. So I remember having the big old recorder and doing like reel to reel tapes and doing crazy edits. It was like Jackass before Jackass, but it was like with high school current events. And I remember everybody wanted to work with me that because like, oh, well, Tom's going to do something cool. So I've always been really creative. I know I have two art pieces that are in a Rochester Museum of Art still to this day that I did in high school, which is really cool because like we go there every once in a while to visit my parents.
Yeah.
And I'll take my kids to see the art pieces that are in there. Definitely not a style that I do anymore. They were very Dahlia inspired, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, totally different than what I ended up doing. And then like everybody else after high school, I got into playing bands, so I ended up touring, doing that. And then once you get in your late 20s and you realize you have no money and your band's not signed, with the influence of some of my bandmates who said, hey, you should get into tattooing, I got into tattooing. And then I did tattooing up until right before this basically started. And then when this took off, I retired from tattooing and now I just do this.
Yeah. I mean, tell me about tattooing wait, let's start the band. Obviously. I grew up in Fresno, California, there was this like underground scene of you go to these like three venues and you see bands and
one of them, the chain reaction.
Chain Reaction is in Anaheim.
Oh, Anaheim.
But yeah. I have been to Chain Reaction.
We used to play there a lot.
Heck yeah. I've seen bands there later on while I was in college. I don't think that would have been. What year were you in the bands?
So basically 99 I graduated, and then I went out. I was the merch guy for Newfound Glory
for
That's year.
Unreal.
And it was right when their self-titled major labels came out.
Yeah.
And I remember I played guitar this whole time, you know, growing up, and I remember seeing them on stage and going, I could do that.
Yeah.
Which in return I could, but as you might know, being in bands, it's not so much about how good you are, it's about who you know.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And just timing. So I did years of, you know, I've been in dozens and dozens of bands. A lot of them are still on Spotify, which is really cool. But yeah, so I did that. I did the Newfound Glory tour, and then I was a roadie for a bunch of other bands. I could tell you crazy stories. And then I got into my own bands. I did that. I was doing bands while I was still tattooing too, which was really cool because I'd be on tour and all my other bandmates were poor. And I'd be like on stage, like, hey, if anybody wants a tattoo, hit me up. I'll tattoo you. And I would literally go to the house and tattoo them after the show and make money and stuff like that, which is cool.
Unreal. Yeah. And give me one story. You could do any story from as a roadie.
There's a lot of crazy ones. I mean, there was just one. So like in my early 20s, I was, you know, very much like the Christian punk kid, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like kind of clean, you know, clean and straight laced, but still like, oh, I'm still punk. You know what I mean? And I remember I went and I met this band that came through Rochester. They were called Sloppy Meat Eaters and they were big. Do you remember that band or no?
No.
Okay. Yeah. So there was a USA Network TV show called Farm Club.
Yeah.
And, their claim to fame was they won that show. It was like American Idol, but for pop punk bands.
Yeah.
So they won that and they ended up getting pretty big in the pop punk scene. And I met them on tour and, we just hit it off. And then they were like, hey, we need a roadie. If you want to come out with us, cool. So I went and did a US tour with them and I knew that they were like atheists, so I kind of kept it like hidden. And then I forget, it was towards the end, and I made a comment saying, well, I'm Christian. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And they literally hit the brakes and they're like, are you a moron? Blah, blah. And it just ostracized me. And they kicked me out of the van. And they literally said, you're not getting back in the van. And they left me there on the side of the road in Texas. And I had to basically get a bus, Greyhound bus to the airport and fly back home because they did not want to deal with me because I was Christian. That's just one of the cleanest stories.
Yeah. Holy yeah. moly.
I mean, I had another one where I ended up getting kicked out of a band right before we started Warped Tour. We were one day before the Warped Tour started.
Yeah.
They woke me up at 4 a.m. in the morning in Las Vegas to say, hey, it's not working. I joined this band. They were from Connecticut. I joined them as their bass player, very tight knit group. I thought everything was working out, but apparently like it just wasn't clicking. I thought it was so like they woke me up at 4 a.m. in the morning, like straight up Metallica. And were like, hey, it's not working out. We got you a bus ticket. See you later.
And gosh,
I don't know if you've ever taken a Greyhound bus, but a Greyhound bus from Las Vegas to Rochester.
Yeah.
Took a week and it was I was robbed. There was a drug raid on the bus where they had a bunch of Mexicans had a bunch of drugs. It was crazy. So
what band was that?
Definitely, that was a band called Shut Up and Deal.
Okay.
And they were from Connecticut. So they might be on Spotify too. So
holy moly, dude.
And years later, I ended up meeting up with a couple of the guys that were in the band and I was just like, dude, why did you kick me out? Cause they wouldn't tell me. And they're just like, we just weren't vibing with you. I'm like, so you couldn't wait one day, let me go to the Warped Tour and tag along with some other band. And they're just like, yeah, we were just over it. I'm like, wow.
Unreal.
So, yeah.
So you are tattooing and that kind of spurs. I mean, tattooing is its own crazy art. And yeah. All
I mean,
that stuff.
I like to say that I have like three different, books in my life. You know, there's obviously the band one and then there's the tattoo one, and the tattoo one very successful in my own right. I was able to go on Ink Master, so I was on season 9 of Ink Master.
Cool.
I got fourth place in that. I did a season 1 of Grudge Match, which was an offshoot show of that. We filmed 2 TV shows that never got picked up, but Paramount did like a what do you want to call them, like a working deal, so we filmed them and then we pitched them to the higher ups at Paramount and they you know passed on it or whatever, but they're going to be on Amazon Prime soon, which is pretty cool. And then COVID hits, couldn't tattoo anymore, so got into making shoes by hand, and then that took off, and I don't make shoes by hand anymore, but we've scaled every year. It's just over, you know, boom, 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 boom. It's getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And now we have tons of licensing and all the fun stuff.
Yeah. And we're going to walk through that because I got it. Like my best friend's a tattoo artist, so I respect the hell out of tattooers and all that stuff. And
well, if you're a tattooer, you're used to hustling. You know what I mean? Yeah. I don't mean like ripping people off. I mean, you're hustling for that next commission, that next, next person you want to get tattooed. You're not used to, at least, you know, my generation of tattooers, you want work, you go and you hustle and get those appointments, you know? Yeah. And now I'm like old man yelling at clouds, where all these young tattooers are like sit in their booth, or, you know, it's like, I don't have an appointment. And I'm just like, well, are you promoting yourself? Well, no, then you got to do it.
Yeah. Like, are you, like, he is such a big proponent of that stuff. And he's like, hit me hard with like, how do you use Instagram and leverage all that, even with Toys on Tap? And so he's like, he's always booked out, and we talk about this regularly, because I don't know if you know this, if you're up on like tattoo people news or whatever, like, I guess there's parts of the country where it's like sinking, like it's a vanity thing. So people aren't spending as much money doing it.
Yeah. I mean, you're definitely going to have different areas, different locations that are going to have there's always going to be great tattooing there. And then you have other ones that are just dying right now. I mean, there's still some cities that tattooing is illegal. You know what I mean? So
which is crazy.
Which is crazy, right?
I know, that's so wild. We talk about that regularly, because I'll see it and I'll have to like, hey, is this true? Like, what's going on with tattooing? And
I mean, all my friends that are still tattooing, they all said, "Oh, you got out at the right time," because they're all like, "This has been the worst year for us," because, you know, they're all 20 plus years tattooers.
Yeah,
and they're kind of, like, they're still doing great work, but they're kind of getting overshadowed by these young kids that I only specialize in this one anime style, and they undercharge everybody, so they're stealing all the work from everybody else. You know, it's the typical generation, you know, yelling at clouds bullshit.
I have noticed that a lot of, you see all these, there's like tattoo artists in like Korea that have crazy styles. There's a couple more that I've seen here, and then they all have like one specific thing they do. And they like mastered. That's great. It's so good. But man, one thing it's a tough go.
Yeah, I agree completely. Yeah. Just, you know, where I came up, you know, you tattooed for, you know, at 10 years experience is when I started really to hone in on one specific style.
Yeah.
And now you have, you know, these kids that as soon as they get done with their apprenticeship, if they even did an apprenticeship and they're like, I'm only going to do, you know, manga style tattoos. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's cool, but I think that when you learn all the different styles, you learn how to apply a tattoo. It will help whatever style you're working on last longer. If you know how they're, you know, all these kids are doing these dumb tattoos where they think, you know, they're redefining how white goes into tattoos, and they're like, oh, it's going to last. I guarantee it's not, you know, in 10 years, they're going to come back and that's going to be gone. And all the old timers are going, we told you, you can't reinvent how white stays in your skin. You could, it looks great for the picture today, but it's still going to go away the same amount of time.
Right.
Yeah.
Luckily my friend talks me out of tattoos. Like I, my arms are covered, and if I want something, he's like, okay, this is kind of like how it functions. This is what it does. So
yeah,
super helpful. At some point, no tattoo artist stays just in tattooing. They do some kind of art form on the side.
Oh, you have to.
Yeah. And you chose shoes. Tell me about why, you even did that.
Yeah. I mean, before that, even while I was tattooing and in bands, I started a clothing company in the, around 2012, 2011 called Arm vs. Hand. Okay. And that did okay, but it wasn't like, oh, you need to retire from being in bands. You know, it did okay. It was very much a scene, you know, anything that, you know, Bring Me the Horizon or any of these Warped Tour bands were wearing. But the thing I learned the most from it was, you know, I was designing what I thought people wanted to see.
Mm-hmm.
And what I do now is I don't design anything other than that's something I want to wear.
Yeah.
And the authenticity really translates to the customers, because that, you know, I think what I didn't know then is, you know, if it's not authentic, people can smell it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And go, I could tell that you just made this because you thought it would sell. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So. Which is crazy. And that's a cool thing to develop. So you grab, I'm assuming, white Air Forces.
I mean, even while I was tattooing, I would paint Air Forces or a lot of Vans. You know, tattooers love their Van slip-ons. So I would always do custom paint jobs on those. When COVID hit. So one of my good friends is Dom. He's the shoe surgeon. Mm-hmm. He's out of Los Angeles, and his claim to fame, other than making shoes for huge celebrities and doing these Louis Vuitton, Gucci, you know, custom shoes, is he runs a shoe course called the Shoe Surgeon. And growing up with him, he'd always over the years say, hey, you know, you should take my course. I think you'd be have a really good time with it. And I go, oh, I don't have the time. You know, I'd always be like, I don't have the time.
Yeah.
Well, COVID hits and he goes, hey, now's the time. And so he gave me his course for free. It was like an online thing. You just kind of order all the stuff from his store. I took it and it just I did the Wolverine pair. People liked it a lot. And then I did a Gambit pair and Silver Samurai pair. And every time I'd make a new pair just for myself, people would be like, hey, I want to order one. Yeah. And then it just, you know, I think the big one was the Ninja Turtle inspired one, really took off. And then it it was like, okay, I think we got something here. And originally it was going to be, you know, I only did the shoe thing like once a week and I would do the tattooing, you know, because by the time all this is starting to take off, tattooing has come back. So I was doing, you know, trying to do, you know, one. Oh, what's up? You can show it. Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. So these are the handmade, So this is one that I actually made by hand.
Holy hell.
Yeah,
that looks so good.
But this is our big, these are the Velcro ones. But yeah, these are made by hand, made by me. Fun.
Yeah, they're insane. They're so good.
Yeah. Thanks, Gary. Like I said, I was supposed to do the shoes here and there and then do the tattooing. And then every time I'd post something, I'd get like 5 orders and then 10 orders and then 20 orders. And then people wanted 100 orders. So I quickly learned that, okay, I'm going to need to dedicate my time to all this and the tattooing is going to take the back burner. So eventually I would tattoo one day a week. And then it turned out I was tattooing one day a month. And then it was I'll tattoo one day out of every 3 months. And then at some point it was like, I haven't tattooed in 6 months. I'm good.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, okay. The way that it scaled is crazy, right? Like you design these shoes and it starts doing all well and you're still doing everything by hand. So when you get an order of 20 pairs, we're talking 6 months to make that?
Yeah. So the big one was the Ninja Turtle inspired one. I have to watch what I say too much with this just because we had a lawsuit with them.
Yeah.
but that was the big one that basically I had to figure out. I ended up getting a lot of my other tattoo workers to come in. We had a old workspace and we set up an assembly line. So like I'd have all the patterns and they'd cut out all the patterns. And then this group would glue them all together. And we basically like worked out like a sweatshop for tattoo artists to make these shoes.
Yeah.
And then eventually, you know, even with those guys, it was still taking way longer than I wanted. So basically I had a friend, he works down in Philadelphia and there is a shoe factory. There's only a few in the US, despite what Trump wants you to think. There is only two in the US, one in LA and one in Philadelphia called Garrickson. And they make ASICS and a lot of these other like really niche shoe company stuff. And they make shoes there. And I ended up, his name's Jason. I ended up hitting him up and him and some people that worked there on their off time were making those shoes, finishing those shoes for me. Okay. And when those finally got done, he was like, hey, if you're going to continue this, you really got to think about a factory like in China or something like that. Cause like he's like, Garrickson's great. But I went there, did the whole tour, but they were like, you got to order 1,000 shoes. And they're going to be $250 cost.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it was just like, it wasn't feasible at that time. Like, cause my whole thing's always been a pre-order system. So like, I'm not going to spend, you know, $250 on 1,000 pairs in hopes that they sell. Cause they wouldn't have, you know what I mean? Like the pre-order system's great. Make what you need and that's it, you know?
Yeah.
So then we ended up, he gave me a bunch of good contacts for some Chinese factories that he knows. And a lot of these people, funny enough, so in China, there's the shoe district and all of these people are interbreeding with each other's factories. And like a lot of the people that really make our shoes are the people that work at Nike at their factories too. Cause like Nike isn't allowed to, any US business is not allowed to own property in China.
Okay.
So they have to really go by their strict work guidelines for exactly X amount of hours. And if you know anything about the Chinese workers, they're amazing and they work way too much.
Yep.
So a lot of them are like, oh, I'm only allowed to work 8 hours today. So they clock out and then they go to the next building next door, which could be us. And then they work another 4 or 5 hours. You know what I mean? Those motherfuckers will work 18 hours a day.
Yeah, with toy stuff, I got a message and an email from a factory, and it was like 1 a.m. there. And it was like, what are you doing? This is crazy. Well, I mean,
our contact is Kenley, and he, I talked to him all day long. And like usually what it is at 9 p.m. at nighttime. Yeah, he doesn't sleep. 9 p.m. When I'm at home, I have the app on my phone that I talk to them, and I talk to them. We go over shoes. He sends me pictures. He said, we approve swatches, you know, all the textures and things like that. And then, you know, around 11, I'll be like, hey, I'm going to bed. He's like, okay, cool. And then I'll wake up at, you know, 6 a.m. for my kids. And he starts messaging me again. I'm like, did you sleep yet? And throughout the whole day, he'll be messaging me. And I'm like, does this motherfucker sleep?
Yeah. Or are you just passing the phone off to someone? Like, this is why.
No, it's definitely him. I asked him that a few times. Cause like, I'm like, there's no way, but it's him. They're just so trained to deal with the U.S. market that they just basically have an alarm, like a notification on their phone, and they jump to it, you know?
Yeah. So you make these shoes, and I mean, making these shoes of these IPs has a lot in common with toys, where if you make a small enough batch, you can kind of evade some stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And then the turtle one came up, and we got hit with some law stuff. How did we rebound from that to then find a factory and start moving?
Yeah, I mean, well, so I didn't get hit with anything on those original inspired shoes that you just saw.
Okay.
It literally happened a year ago. So like it was like four years into it.
Oh, so, okay.
Yeah.
That's garbage. That means they're trying to retroactively get stuff. Yeah,
100%. They went back and they, I mean, like that's why I don't say how many we made because I mean, I did an interview the first year in 2020 where, you know, I said, oh, we made this many of the first run, and they literally had that in the lawsuit, and they're like, from this article and this thing. I mean, they have their lawyers that scour the internet and get all those damn details that you're like, how the hell did you find a little newspaper in Cortland, New York?
Yeah. anyone comes and knocking, I'll delete this video so quick and all of this.
I mean, none of this, you know, with the lawsuit, none of this is news to them because I mean, you know, they know all this, like we disclosed everything. So,
yeah.
So I've definitely learned a lot about legal and law and how much lawyers cost. We've been in the lawsuit for a year. We just ended it, so it's done and over with. But yeah.
I have a quick question about this one last, and then we'll go to like factory stuff. But does that mean you're done working with turtles as a whole?
Yeah, the part of the contract, unless they get bought out, Viacom gets bought out by another company, and that company comes in and they can decide to work with us. You know, whether it's Skydance or whoever. I mean, here's the good thing. All of these movie studios every couple of years get cycled around and they get bought out by somebody else, and then they fire their entire licensing team or whoever, and then they hire their licensing team. So like right now we can't do anything with any of them, but who's to say in a year there's a whole new team and we're good to go.
Take me back to the first, you get word that you need to start pivoting towards working in China, which damn that orange man who's making this now tough for all of us. You are doing that and trying to figure out how to do the pre-order system and all this stuff at the same time to make this viable. What are the feelings? How are you like doing it? Because working with China, for those that don't, like with toys, it's tough because sometimes it's unknown.
Yeah,
it's all unknown. And so I'm imagining with shoes, it's the exact same thing.
Yeah, it was figuring out the lead time. You know what I mean? They take around 54 days to make a sample and get it to you. And they say that once you order the shoes, it could take, you know, 30 business days or whatever, and 30 days to get it to you.
That's quick.
But yeah, there's a lot of variables. You know what I mean? So After the first year, you know, we used to say, oh, they'll ship in a month. And then, you know, a month would come and everybody's like, where the hell are my shoes? And after you answer that question 100 times, go, they're on their way. We quickly learned. Now we just say, we kind of pull the hot toys and we say, oh, they're shipping in Q3 or Q4.
Yeah.
And it gives you a little bit more room to like have a little, if there's a little delay and stuff like that. So that's kind of our go-to these days, which is nice.
I do. And then you're balancing around like Lunar New Year.
Oh God. I mean, from December 10th till, so after December 10th, you can't order anything until, what is it?
March,
around March 5th. It's crazy. I mean, so they're still working up until January 20th, but you can't order anything new from December until March.
Yeah.
But from January 20th till March 5th, they are on vacation.
Yeah. I did get, I had to do that with the last toy we did where we ordered and it was like end of December and they were like, okay, we can do this.
Did they miss it? And they're like, you won't get it until March now.
Yeah, they did. They put like a little asterisk where they were like, we're going to try. Luckily, the factory was honest about like, we're going to try to get it before everyone goes home. And didn't even come close.
Yeah, we had a few this year where they were supposed to get it at the end of January. And they're like, not going to happen until March.
You're like, okay, great. I'll tell everyone that you suck. Thanks.
Yeah.
So you start this process. And then we've talked because you've mentioned like the amount of licenses that you hold or can work with. So you go from doing this as a tattoo artist where you're producing these like one-off shoes that people love to now somehow pivoting to factory and then pivoting towards license.
Licensing is a whole other.
Yeah. How did you make that world happen? Designing your own shoe, by the way, is a feat in itself.
Yeah. I mean, I have a lot of friends that are in, you know, I've made a lot of friends, especially when I'm starting out, that had designed their own silhouettes.
Mm-hmm.
And not to toot my own horn, but they just weren't good. Either they were just too busy. I look at a shoe like a tattoo. Yeah. You need to look at it from a distance and you should know what it is. You should know what, you know, this is the toe, this is the heel. And I have a lot of friends. I love them to death. But I'll look at their shoe and I go, I don't know what I'm looking at here.
Yeah.
at here. You know what I mean? So what was the question?
Licensing. How do you pivot? Right. So not only are you getting told that you need to work at factories, which is a whole nother thing to learn, but then having to pivot towards, oh, I want to work with these brands.
Yeah. So I ended up, one of our best customers, I mean, this guy, so even at the time we were doing one-on-one commissions, like if you wanted, you know, me to still make one, and I was charging $1,500 for those. And I had this one customer, the first year he bought like 15 commissions.
Holy hell.
And I remember as this is getting bigger and bigger and bigger, you know, I'm not a businessman, you know, I'm a tattoo artist. I'm an artist. So I don't have that mindset. So I remember calling him up. I go, hey, you know, cause we had a good rapport. And I just remember saying, hey, you know, I remember a few weeks ago you were on the, you know, Forbes best 200 new businesses or whatever. Like, what do you do? And he's like, oh, I run a I run a marketing firm. And then he runs a nonprofit too. And I was like, obviously you're a fan. Would you be interested in, you know, coming on and working with me? Cause I don't know what the hell I'm doing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And you know, it was, he was like, yeah, I'm definitely interested. But he's very business. So like, he was like, you have to come in, you have to get an evaluation, which cost us like $5,000 that you don't get to get back.
Right.
But you give the company all your information, you know, your overhead, everything like that. And they basically do a 5-year evaluation of what you're worth then and what they think you're going to be worth 5 years down the line.
Yeah.
You know, that was a big risk at that time because, you know, I didn't have a lot of money. So like $5,000 was like, oh my God, and I'm not getting this back. But I did it. The evaluation was actually really, really good. And he's like, okay, yeah. So then he goes, listen, you know, while we're still working on the contract to come in, because I'm also of the mindset, because like a lot of people are like, oh, you know, why are you going to give this guy a piece of your pie? You know, why are you bringing on this guy? Because like, and I'm like, listen, do I want 100% of a failed business?
We interrupt this broadcast of Toys on Tap to bring you this.
Meanwhile, in a galaxy of bootleg treasures. DOV-2, we have engine failure. We must crash land on DKE Toy Planet. Oh my, we're doomed. Wait, salvation. Hooray, we're saved, DOV-2. Limited edition custom artist-made action figures and DKE toys.
Check out www.dketoys.com for a full catalog.
Hooray for custom action figures. DKE.
Or do I want, you know, a majority owner of a business that is very successful because I bring on people that are going to do the job better than me?
Yeah.
So I know my weaknesses. I'm not a businessman in that sense. I've learned a lot in the last 2 years. So maybe now I'm more of a businessman, but especially then I did not know anything. So he basically said, hey, there's a licensing expo in Las Vegas. Let's go to that. Let's meet up for the first time. Let's hang out. And then let's have these meetings at the licensing. And he was amazing. Like him and he brought one of his other coworkers that is a videographer with him. And we just went to these meetings with a couple of our samples that we did. And we're just like, hey, we make custom shoes. You know, we're going to scale up. We're going to do these more masks and blah, blah, blah. And we landed a bunch of licensing deals that year. So
that's
and
then every, in 1 year.
Every year we go and we, you know, at least acquire 5 or 6. You know, we have another one in this next month. So yeah. No, later this month, at the end of this month, we're going again.
So and it's always this licensing expo, same situation.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, we have had, you know, some people, you know, trying to think. So I made shoes for, David Arquette, the guy that's okay. From Scream. And I made shoes for him and he goes, hey, I own the license to Bozo the Clown. Would you like to make a Bozo the Clown shoe? And I was like, sure, yeah, that'd be awesome. So we got the license from David. So like a lot of stuff like that. I know Ryan was drinking one time at a bar in Nashville and he ended up drinking with the guy that owns the rights to Tales of the Crypt. And we're working on that. You know what I mean? It's just random coincidences, you know? Yeah. So that happens a lot too. But I would say like 90% of them are all kind of out of the licensing expo in Las Vegas.
Which is so insane. And it's like, this is nitty gritty stuff. And I mean, maybe this is like, I don't know. Because you're doing shoes. So some of these companies haven't done shoes before or haven't done shoes for their property. So do you have to like show them a shoe and say like, hey, this is what I can do for you?
Yeah, we have a mock-up, a really professionally done like mock-up. And yeah. We basically come in there. They were all very impressed. You know, we come with a few of our own shoes. And I think mm-hmm. the first year we had our own silhouette. So we came with an all-white version of our shoes just to say this is what it looks like. But we show them our mock-up and they're like, oh, wow, this looks really great. I'm like, yeah, this is what it's going to look like. And I basically have what are called call-outs. And I say, this is this fabric, this fabric, this fabric. And, you know, and a lot of them are just like, because 98% of all the people trying to get licenses are T-shirt licenses.
How weird.
Yeah. And they're all. So when we show up there and we're like, hey, we want to do shoes. We want to do blah, 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 blah. And they're like, wow, this is so much more refreshing than another t-shirt license.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And I think with what I love about your shoes, you said it earlier where you want to be able to know what it is from a distance. That's, I think, what draws me to your shoes is like when I look at it, I don't have to guess the IP. I know the IP.
Yeah.
And
which also works in our favor when it's something inspired by, because you're like, yeah. You don't have to put the logo on there at all, but you know exactly what it is.
Right. Right. And so like, that's why it was like the second I saw it, it was like, oh, I'm gravitating towards this. This is cool. And it feels new. And so when you go to these meetings and you get all these licenses and you start moving forward, does that change? Like, what does that do for your mindset? Because now having other things that you're working for, not just yourself, does that kind of do something different for you?
I mean, it legitimizes what you're doing for sure.
Yeah.
But then I also look at my schedule and I'm like, because now, especially when we worked with Warner Brothers, like Warner Brothers, you were on a Zoom call every week. And a lot of this is why I hate the big movie studios and companies is you get on. I don't think there's a you don't need to do a meeting every week, but they want to do this meeting every week. And half the meeting is just talking about what you talked about the last meeting. And then you finish the last half talking about the new stuff that you should have been talking from the beginning.
Yeah.
It's a lot of just circling around. You know what I mean? That's why it takes you know, 8 months to get something done. You know what I mean?
Can't do it. Meetings suck. I get that there's a point, but it's hard to see the point when those things happen.
Yeah. Now, so I used to do all those with Ryan. Now I've gotten to the point is Gary's our account manager and jack of all trades over here. Gary and Ryan will do all the meetings because I'm like, listen, I have so much stuff that I have to design the ads. I have to design the shoes. I have to design all this stuff.
Yeah.
I just want to be focused on the art stuff. You guys handle all that. So they do the wholesaling and everything.
Yeah. What's crazy is at some point as this is scaling up, so you go to your first, what's the year of your first licensing expo?
2022.
Okay. 2022, this happens and you're scaling up to now you've mentioned yourself and two others that are now working with Bullairs. How big is this company?
We have shipping, Brendan in the back and Alex, and then we have Gary that's here and then Ryan, but then we also have contract artists. So we have a guy named Nick. Nick is cool. Nick is, did you ever watch the movie Surf Ninjas?
Yeah.
So the little kid, Adam.
Okay.
That's Nick. So Nick, he also has a full-time job at Disney. He works on their asset folders.
Yeah.
But he also used to work for Loungefly. So he does now I've gotten to the point where he's so like in tune with what I like. Like today I send him like, hey, do a mock-up of this shoe.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'm on it. So like he does all the mock-ups now that we pitch to the licensees and stuff like that. Then we also have a guy in Canada. His name's Grim Job. He's a crazy, crazy man. And he designs a lot of our artwork and our parody stuff. And we'll do some really cool stuff. And then we have a guy named Chauncey. He's another tattoo artist that I'm friends with. He does all the box art and packaging for us. And he's down in Texas. So, yeah, we're always expanding.
Yeah, which is insane. Absolute insanity. Love that you guys are expanding. So it brings us kind of close to this like current time where you're still doing this. You're at conventions. What was the first, in seeing you guys at conventions and stuff, what was the first convention that you were like, this is where we need to be to do this kind of stuff?
Well, I mean, I was still I've done tattoo conventions for 20 something years. So I'm used to the tattoo convention circuit, but, I think the first one I did as Bullairs at a dedicated, you know, booth was a Super Jersey Expo in New Jersey.
Yeah.
For my buddy Paul. And that's the one where I had my own banner and like it was all like real fresh and new. And I had all my stuff set up and displayed and everybody was like, holy cow. Like, I love it when you watch somebody walking by and they stop and then they turn and they're like, what is that? And like, that's where I quickly realized, okay, we have something here. And then I will say the time I realized that maybe we're a little bit bigger than I thought we were was last year at LA Comic Con, which is a huge Comic Con.
Yeah.
Literally everybody came by the booth and said, I see your ads everywhere. I see your shoes everywhere. And I'm like, wow. Okay. A lot of people have seen our stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're great at, so for, you described like all the things that you're doing for art, and it's easy from the outside to say like, oh, you're just the art guy, but you're the social media, you're the talking point, you're the figure, like you're so much that goes into that.
A little bit. I mean, I'm definitely all that, but I'd say as far as like the face, like Gary goes live every Wednesday. Today he'll be going live a little bit later today. He does all the Q&A. And so like there's an inside joke. We have a t-shirt coming called the Tom and Gary Show.
Yeah.
And it's just like Tom and Jerry. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like he is just as much like the face too. Like he's out there, he's pressing the flesh, as I like to call it, but he's like, he's going live on Facebook. He's going live on TikTok and we're doing a lot more of that too. So, you know, I think, as much as, you know, I want to be off and do these things, you still have to, you know, you still have to go live. You still have to appease the IG and TikTok gods. And he does a great job with that too.
Which is absolute insanity. So good. That kind of brings us up to here. And the question that I get to ask artists, which I love doing, is what's next? You've accomplished so much. You have licensed all these things. Where are you hoping to head?
I mean, right now we're focusing on wholesale.
Yeah.
Like, you know, because we're not an actual store that's in an actual place. I mean, we have our HQ here in Cortland, New York. But We are looking at wholesale as an extension of the brand. So, like, you know, we just got a license with, a wholesale deal with Dallas Vintage Toys. I don't know if you're familiar with them.
Yeah, yeah.
Amazing store. So, like, that's a big win. So we're looking at, like, you know, our pitch to all these wholesalers are, like, you know, we're not a physical store. There still are people out there that want to go and actually walk into the store and see it and discover it and pick it up.
Yeah.
So we have a whole directory on the website for the, you know, wholesale locations. And, you know, if you're, you know, traveling to, you know, Texas, you're like, oh, where is there a Belair's realtor, you know, retailer in Texas, and they go, oh, Dallas Vintage Toys, or this one, and they, you know, they go there. So that's kind of our go-to right now. We also, let me grab something real quick.
Yeah.
So on top of doing the wholesale stuff, now these aren't the lace faces that belong in here, you know, but we have, so I don't know if you are familiar with lace faces. So there's bow biters and lace faces.
Yeah.
Now they were actually owned by the same company back in the day. And we've re-brought up lace faces to a new era. So, like, these are the vintage ones, you know, the vintage logo, everything like that, but with a new kind of up-to-date style. So these are like the Billy Bob ones, but it's on a Chuck E. Cheese one. But yeah, so we're bringing these back, and these, our goal with these really is to get them in Targets and Walmarts and things like that.
Because
as much as we'd love to see our $300 shoes in one of those, you know, get a wholesale order from one of those big companies, it's not going to happen. But, you know, if you get a wholesale order for, you know, some of these guys, it's definitely more feasible. So
those are so, I remember seeing those or something like that when I was a kid and seeing them on shoes, and, which kind of opens up like the toy side of it. Cause we talked a little bit about the Panda ones and seeing the, which are insane. And which, by the way, that sculptor, when you sent that picture, I sent it over to him and I can't get him to stop talking about how he's wanting to do that. So
that's also a funny one with the PandaCon, right? Cause you immediately think Ninja Turtles.
Yeah.
But, and you're like, wait a minute, you just said you couldn't do Ninja Turtles. So we can't do Ninja Turtles, but PandaCon is owned by a separate company.
Weird.
And you can license that. So it's a nice little loophole.
Heck yeah. So he is, that's next step for him, by the way. But we like seeing those types of things and seeing how that can be expanded into places like Target or Walmart or whatever. That's rad.
Yeah.
And that's a whole nother like step.
Yeah. I mean, you know, maybe back in the 80s and 90s, you saw the lace faces and stuff like in, you know, the shoe department area, but there's nothing like that anymore. You know, you go there and it might be some laces and some shoe spray, if that, you know, so like it's a whole untapped market this day and age. So that's kind of where we're pushing lately.
It's almost like you're holding nostalgia with kids' shoes, like with single-handedly by yourself.
Trying. I mean, I can easily say, you know, and I know a lot of shoe creators and a handful that do try to do what we do, but they don't have the licenses for sure.
Yeah.
And then they don't even if our, you know, runs are 50 pairs, they still don't even touch that number. So like I can honestly say without sounding too arrogant is like we are the only ones that do what we do at this level, you know.
You'd said running with lead times and stuff. When you're looking over the course of a year, I don't know. However,
we have it all scheduled out.
Yeah. That's the question. Because the like having to work with a factory in which they take 54 days or whatever to get you your sample, that means you're working 54 days ahead with every shoe, multiple shoes in line.
Yes. Like for licensing, right? We have licensing with Capcom now. So we have,
which is rad.
A Capcom Mega Man shoe that we're finishing up. The factory is now, so we can, when we go to the meeting in Las Vegas, they have a shoe in hand, go, here it is. You know what I mean?
Does that open up, man, I have so many questions with this stuff. Like when Capcom does the Capcom versus Marvel or whatever, does having the Capcom open up the other side?
No, you have that. Okay. That's all umbrella licenses. Yeah. It gets really weird. I mean, there's some, a lot of licenses. I'm trying to think of the one. Hey Gary, what's the name of the people that own like Crash Bandicoot and Rare? What is the name of that company? Was it something tree or something? Yeah. So there's a company that we met at, like, a lot of these licenses that hold multiple IPs.
Yeah.
You won't pay like one single price. It'll be like an umbrella one. They're like, you have to pay the guarantee on this one. You have to pay it on this one and this one and this one. It's not like one. Yeah. It's not one flat. Some, there has been a few, but it's very rare that that does happen. It's nice if it was, but yeah. So it kind of sucks.
Holy geez. It's insane because looking at your shoes, it brings back nostalgia immediately of like things that once were in our lives. And so
heck yeah, that's what I aim for.
Which is cool. Yeah. And it's cool to like work with toy artists on this side and see that, and then see shoes that are like, oh my god, those match that, and that's rad. It is intense to have you on and to talk through all these things. The last part of the podcast is always like you get to promote and do whatever you want today, where we can find you, where, what shoes you got coming up. I know you launched Star Wars shoes recently.
Our May 4th collection is still live. That's going till the 18th.
Empire Blister. Empire Blisters. Specializing in action figure blisters. 2.75 inch or 1/18. 19 different styles. Two sizes of clamshell figure cases. Four different bulk pack options. Quantities of 100 sample packs available. Empire Blisters.
Now functions. Toys on Tap.
That means a 10% off coupon on checkout. Use code Toys on Tap 10. That's TOYSOMTAP 10.
Empire Blisters. Empire Blisters.
If you want the deal where it's like $150 off, just join our Facebook private group called the Secret Sneaker Society, 5,000 strong. We have crazy contests and giveaways and polls. We're always listening to our fan base. And as a thank you to that fan base for the May 4th drop, you go on there, there's a discount code and all the shoes will take $150 off. So it's a lot cheaper if you're a penny pincher, which I totally get in this economy right now. As far as what's happening, I don't know. I don't know when this is coming out, but I know the Ron English drop is going to be revealed on Friday. What's the date today?
7th, May 7th.
Yes.
Yeah.
So what, the 9th?
Yeah.
Yeah. So on the 9th, we're revealing these and Ron's going to be filming all these cool videos. He's at a pop-up in New York City. All next week. So he's going to be shooting some really cool content. We have a crazy rest of the year. I can say, you know, if there's a movie coming out, we have a shoe that's either licensed or inspired by, you know, there's Superman, there's Fantastic Four, there's a new Predator movie. There's a bunch of stuff coming out. So if you're into all that stuff, stay tuned for sure. And as always, follow us on our socials. We're on TikTok, Facebook, Instagram is at bull_airs_official, and bullairs.com is the website.
Heck yeah. I do have to as a little end to this, I do have to ask, Orange Man upstairs doing dumb shit, all that stuff, how's that impacting you guys as a company right now?
So we literally have a post, an illustration that basically, and it was kind of in tandem with the Star Wars discount that we gave. We're like, listen, as Super 7 is putting a tax on their freaking, did you see this where they have the tariff tax on in-stock items,
which is,
I don't know how that's working, Brian.
Yeah, they're doing that. Verizon is doing that for all cell phone usage, even though I hold my phone.
Yeah, Funko just instituted a 40% tariff. Like, you know, like, it's crazy.
Unreal.
So we made an illustration, and I posted it on our stories a few times too. And it basically said, in a world where everyone is now charging you more because of these tariffs, we're actually going to reward you and charge less.
Yeah.
So that's unless it gets to the point where it's 500% tariff.
Yeah.
right now we're going the opposite direction.
Yeah, which I don't know what the – is it – I mean, I still, there's not a person I can talk to, right? Like, that's going to tell me the exact of what's happening. Cause we have a toy that's like, we're just starting the mold process. And so we're about to get collapsed in on unless this fixes itself in 90 days.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's crazy. I know Gary was talking about that this one toy company you know, normally their tariffs for this, you know, whatever you, the bin or whatever it's, you know, the ship that's coming in or whatever. Yeah. Normally the tariff that they would pay would be $15,000 on this. Mm-hmm. Right. And they said it was almost $1 million. So they abandoned the storage unit. And then they basically said, I can't afford to pay this. Like,
yeah,
I'll refund my customers before I have to pay this, because this is crazy.
Yeah, it is a wild thing. I mean, I'm small potatoes still, right? So like the normal bill for some of these toys is like $8,000 or $10,000. And then the tariff on top of that, it's like, oh, I'm paying $20,000 just for this.
Oh, it's crazy. I mean, since this started a few months ago, you know, every couple of weeks we get a nice big old fat bill from somebody.
Yeah. Who's it come from? Does it just come from the U.S. government?
Yeah.
Okay. I haven't got mine yet. So once I import, I guess I'll get it in the mail.
Yeah.
That won't be late for them. That's crazy. Dude, it's been so good having you on Toys on Tap. Thank you for making the time. Appreciate it, man.